From Greensburg to Erie, Reading to Warren, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, he campaigned on raising the minimum wage, but the legislature would not go along. Now Governor Tom Wolf has raised the minimum wage for state workers by executive order. David Taylor is here to host a Capitol Watch discussion. And Pennsylvania still does not have a completed state budget, but that is not stopping Governor Wolf from spending money. I'll have a town hall commentary on why he is triggering a constitutional crisis. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, here are news headlines from PAWatchdog.org.
Hello and welcome to the weekly PA Watchdog Capitol Watch News Update. I'm Eric Baim. Our top story this week, one of the largest school districts in Pennsylvania is on the verge of running out of money, unable to cut much more from its $168 million budget and unwilling to ask local taxpayers to dig deeper into their pockets. Erie school district officials say they could be on a runaway path to bankruptcy. Even with deep cuts, Erie faces a budget deficit that officials say could be anywhere between $3 million and $9 million, depending on how much funding comes through from the state when this new year's state budget that's yet to be approved by Harrisburg. A best-case scenario includes radical education spending that's been proposed by Governor Tom Wolf, and even with that, there would still be a $3 million shortfall. But no matter how much aid comes from the state, Erie schools are saddled with a structural deficit that's tied to massive mandatory increases in pension payments and to the absence of state reimbursements for charter school students. Those pension costs, largely baked into the pie by giving increases to employees over the last few decades, there's virtually nothing that can be done to actually reduce them in the long run. We're at the end of our rope, says Superintendent Jay Badams. He talked to Evan Grossman of Watchdog.org this week. He says it's just one of those situations where we are ready to wave the white flag. In other news this week, Governor Tom Wolf is giving all state employees a raise and the rest of Pennsylvania will pay for it. Wolf signed an executive order this week that he says he hopes will propel legislative action to increase pay for all workers in the state. For now, the effects will be concentrated on about 450 out of 79,000 state workers. The minimum wage of $10.15 per hour will apply to most state contracts beginning on July 1st. Wolf says it's fair for workers. The administration anticipates a $2.6 million increase in wages for state contractors. In his budget address in February, Wolf called for a $10.15 minimum wage for all Pennsylvanians. The state's minimum wage is currently $7.25 per hour. That's in line with the federal minimum. Democrats across the country are pushing for higher minimum wages, with Oregon this week approving the nation's highest minimum wage, raising it to $14.75 per hour. And finally this week, state lawmakers, they make pretty good pay too. On top of getting more than $80,000 in annual salary, they're packing away an average of more than $10,000 in per diems too, according to a new report. Using right-to-know requests, Harrisburg's WHTM-TV, an ABC affiliate, found that the 203-member House paid out more than $2.1 million in per diems last year. The 50-member Senate paid out $247,000. Per diem costs were up in 2015 over previous years, in part because lawmakers spent more time in Harrisburg during the budget impasse, or at least that's why they say it happened. Of course, that means more money coming out of taxpayers' pockets to pay for those per diems, even though lawmakers never really did get around to finishing that budget. For the PA Watchdog, I'm Eric Baim. Check out these stories and more at PAWatchdog.org and follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Penn Watchdog.
Governor Tom Wolf's entire agenda is stalled in the state General Assembly. But like President Obama, he is willing to do by executive order what he can't get done legislatively. He has now added nearly $2 million to state payroll costs by unilaterally raising the minimum wage for state workers. David Taylor is here to host a Capitol Watch look at the impact of that action. He is joined by Matt Briette and Neil Lusher. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, president of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, my pal Neil Lesher, the legislative director for the National Federation of Independent Business in Pennsylvania. Neil, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, David.
Also with us on board, our pal Matt Briette, the president of Pennsylvania's free market think tank, the Commonwealth Foundation. Matt, welcome aboard.
Hey, good to be with you guys.
So the crazy times continue in Sin City, Harrisburg, PA, and that the that Governor Wolf every day appears to be more ever more of an acolyte of Barack Obama, in that he, following the president's lead, that the governor is now asserting all kinds of executive powers that it are not at all clearly his under the Constitution. Matt, you want to give people a thumbnail sketch of what's the of the latest?
Sure. Yes, you're exactly right, David. We are seeing sort of a playbook, the pages being torn out of Washington, D.C. and inserted in the capital city here in Pennsylvania. And the latest is a near 40% increase in the minimum wage for those under the governor's jurisdiction, employees that is, and then also extending to vendors of the state to impose a wage floor upon our small businesses and others that are providing services to the state.
So how would that even work exactly? I mean, and what authority does he have to make this kind of edict?
Well, that's the question. Certainly the question that a lot of legislators are asking, a lot of us that you know, monitor the Capitol are asking, is where this authority comes from. There was really no advance notice. Monday, the governor held a press conference. It was closed to the press, although I would note that the room was full of a number of colorful shirts from our friends in the public sector unions that all must have received a special invitation to be there. But, you know, with the stroke of a pen, the governor says that, you know, the wage shall be $10.15 an hour because I say it shall be so. And interestingly, you know, one of the questions that came from a reporter at the press conference was, but there's no money in the budget to pay for these increased wages for state workers and build in for the government contracts. Where are you going to find the money from? And the governor's response was, because I said so. And it makes no sense, and it's in the backdrop of a lot of questions that have been raised over the last several weeks about the administration's spending as it pertains, you know, in particular to the corrections budget, where the governor vetoed half of the corrections budget and then a few weeks later said, well, we're just going to spend that amount anyway, even though I vetoed the money. And a number of constitutional scholars have already testified in front of legislative committees and said, well, that's not really how the Constitution works.
As Neil said, the governor says, well, because I said so. There's other because I said so really misinformation that the governor is putting out, because this is really the precursor for a push for a statewide increase in the minimum wage from $7.25 to $10.15, which we know is part of the whole presidential campaign, these types of things that the special interests and union interests that push these things. Where the governor just does another because I said so is he claims that doing so would create new jobs, that making the price of labor higher artificially without there any clear productivity gains from this.
Right. No gains in value, just gains in price.
That's right. That we would create 6,000 new jobs by raising the price of labor. This, of course, flying in the face of the independent fiscal office, a complete independent body that just calls balls and strikes, that said no, such policies would destroy about 31,000 jobs.
Right.
Now, let's put that into perspective. In 2015, Pennsylvania created a total of 38,000 new jobs.
Net,
yes. So we're talking about essentially the destruction of equivalent amount of jobs that the economy as well as chugging along trying to create without these types of punitive edicts from on high, arbitrarily chosen. I mean, I always say, well, if $10 is, you know, not going to have an impact, and in fact, if it's going to create 6,000 jobs, maybe if we went up to $20, we'd create 12,000 jobs according to their logic.
Well, why stop there? Everyone should be a millionaire.
That's right. Or let's just have the NBA minimum be, you know, what everybody gets paid, and we're all doing
and
well.
And devote ourselves rich. And you know, Neil, with your organization, with NFIB, small business, independent business, that you know, that your members are the ones that are likelier to have entry level workers at that level of compensation. What does that mean for your sector?
Well, you know, a 40% increase in mandatory wages for entry-level workers can be significant for many businesses. Not every business, but for some businesses that do employ a lot of teen workers and low-skill workers, it's a huge hit to their bottom line. And there's only a few places they can go. They can reduce hours, they can increase prices, but that comes with a limit because consumers are only willing to pay so much more. And oftentimes I hear from small business owners that they'll just pick up more shifts themselves. So, you know, I mean, Matt's absolutely correct. People will lose hours and or their job because of this, because you haven't created any new wealth with which to redistribute.
Well, and this, if I could say, I guess I kind of have direct experience with this. My son, who turned 16 late last year, is looking at his first, real jobs, and he's going to be on the sanitation crew at Hershey Park, where it's minimum wage. And this is great experience for him to be able to do. Now, a large business like Hershey Park might be able to take a government mandate like this, should they be forced to pay a higher wage, and maybe pass that off into the price of the entry into the park
or concessions or some other way parking.
That's right.
Find some other revenue source to make up for that.
But if he were going to work for the pizza joint down the street from us, or a smaller employer that says you have it's a 40% increase in your labor costs, which tends to be the biggest thing. They might say, you know what? I'm just not going to hire you, Miles. I'm sorry. I wanted this job, but I'm going to just clean the tables, take out the trash, do those types of things.
And one of the points that I want to raise is that in the workplace, employers are finding it's increasingly difficult to find the people for the jobs that are available. It isn't just – unemployment isn't only because we can't find jobs for people. It's because we can't find people for jobs, and that you hear more and more from employers that potential new hires are lacking what is described as the soft skills, which means that they don't have the internal discipline to – let's count it off – to show up on time, to put in a full day at work, to not mouth off to the supervisor, to not scare the customers, to maintain
– let me give you another example.
Yes.
So I went with my son to – as a job fair, and he wore a shirt tucked in his pants, a belt. You know, he looked respectable. He was offered two jobs there on the spot.
Yes.
You're hired. He had his pick, retail or sanitation. He wants to work. He likes to work. So he said, I want to be on the hose crew. Sitting next to him was a kid with his pants hanging halfway down his rear end, large gauge earrings. You guys know what this stuff is? I mean, it was not respectable, something that we're not going to put you in front of the public. These are the types of things that you're talking about, David, that – boy, people with coming in there with foul language on their T-shirts, applying for jobs. I mean, this is the type of things that we're challenged with.
Yes, and it's certainly a broad-based societal problem. But even as a manifestation of that, that because government mandates raising up the minimum entry-level training wage, that there are fewer of these entry-level jobs, which means that there are fewer options for kids. Fewer kids get those jobs, and that initial job that you have when you're 15, whether it's doing sanitation at an amusement park or flipping burgers like I did when I was a kid, this is where a young person would first learn those skills and realize, hey, I need to bring focus to my job. I need to pay attention to detail and all those sorts of things. And by killing off those entry level jobs through inflated government mandated wages, you're actually distancing those young people from their first contact with the real world. And as a result, you're actually rendering them less employable. You're extending their time outside of the workforce. And so, like, especially in urban areas, you see that the teenage unemployment rate is, it's crazy high. And like, how do you solve that? Well, you don't solve it by making those jobs more expensive and fewer in number. You solve that problem by creating more opportunities for entry-level workers, and this policy is directly contrary to that.
Well, and that's where I think the governor has it exactly wrong. He talks about living wages, of being able to take care of your family, and that's why we have to boost this. These jobs are not those. These are not family-sustaining jobs that we're talking about harming in this process. These are, as you've noted, David, entry-level. It's that first rung on the economic ladder that everybody has to climb at some point. point.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Matt Briette from Commonwealth Foundation and Neil Lesher from NFIB Pennsylvania. So the governor's mandate, his sort of magical assumed powers regarding the minimum wage, that really wasn't the only news out of Harrisburg. There were actually accolades in the press that that Governor Wolf was named the favorite governor of.
Well, the governor of Florida, of all places, Rick Scott, who is the second term governor in the big state of Florida, named Tom Wolf as one of his favorite governors in the entire country.
Why?
Because of his policies, he is sending, Governor Tom Wolf, that is, sending more and more people packing for Florida.
People and money and jobs.
That's right.
To the Sunshine State.
Florida has been one of the biggest recipients of Pennsylvanians. We have seen a large out-migration. This has been happening for a number of years in Pennsylvania. In fact, last year, we had one resident leave every 12 and a half minutes. So when it comes to our out-migration, Pennsylvania is a loser. If not for international immigration coming into Pennsylvania, we would be a state losing in population. Most states are all gaining. Very few are losing. But when you look at the domestic migration, we are sending people out of
packing. And this is people voting with their feet. This is people making choices about where they're going to build their lives. And Pennsylvania is my home. Pennsylvania is my country. I can't go. I belong here. But for many people who are less attached, they wind up going where the job prospects are more plentiful and more promising, and that places that have greater economic dynamism, they attract more population.
Well, look, I've got a lot of our supporters, folks that have major operations in Pennsylvania will tell me, hey, Matt, if my capital were more mobile, I would be looking to relocate because Pennsylvania is an inhospitable place to do business. We have the 15th highest state and local tax burden. We have some of the highest rates in areas where you don't want it. We have some of the lowest things in areas where you want high rate. I mean, you talk about a very difficult place to do business. Pennsylvania is it. And that is what has led to a lot of the slow growth and even the out-migration that we've seen since 2011. We've been losing population. And here's some, let me just give you some numbers. This is where you have this compounding effect. Since 1992, Pennsylvania has lost over $11.6 billion in gross income over that time period, meaning people creating wealth have moved out.
Right.
And then with that goes the tax revenue of about $350 million annually of that law. So this is money that would otherwise be for government coffers. But the fact that people are saying, I'm voting with my feet, I'm going to go to a state that has opened for business, that welcomes my capital, doesn't look at it as a cash cow to be milked. That is what is happening in Pennsylvania.
And just as an aside, what's especially telling about those numbers, that 1992 was the year after the crippling multi-billion dollar tax hike that Harrisburg passed, $3 billion in higher taxes, almost all of it on business. And so that really did condemn Pennsylvania to two generations of economic underperformance. State policy matters, which is why we fight the battles that we fight every day in state government.
And this was actually backed up by a report that was just issued by the Independent Fiscal Office. It's actually kind of buried in their economic outlook that they issue, with the budget each year. But there was a data point that I find quite scary. Over the next decade, they project that the working age population in Pennsylvania will be reduced by 200,000 adults, while the retiree population in Pennsylvania will increase by 600,000 adults. So think about what that means. We've got an erosion of the tax base because we have fewer people working and paying taxes and buying things, raising families in PA, paying sales tax. And we're going to have a huge influx of senior citizens, and people don't like to have this conversation, but senior citizens are very costly for the Commonwealth because we provide an awful lot of services, whether it be through Medicaid service
pensions,
or everywhere else,
yep.
And we don't tax pensions. Mm-hmm. So unless our lawmakers and leaders get serious about creating jobs in Pennsylvania and trying to reverse this flow, you know, we're going to be upside down and
but
not-
wait, it gets worse. It gets worse because Governor Wolf has doubled down on this, right? Those numbers you're citing, Neil, are before any of Governor Wolf's bad policies of raising taxes would get through. If he got his way with his latest budget proposal, we'd be looking at about another $850 for a family of four in higher taxes. That only speeds up that process of people looking to relocate.
And conversely, this is why with Pennsylvania manufacturers that we are totally committed to a pro-growth, pro-development agenda for Pennsylvania's energy revolution.
Absolutely.
And if we embrace that, that there are trillions of cubic feet of natural gas under Pennsylvania, that the process of bringing that up, putting it into our energy economy, using it for manufacturing, all of the pipeline infrastructure, all the dynamism that can come from that, there are generations of wealth that are waiting to be harnessed. But we have to optimize conditions for growth. So it really
well,
is
let's
a choice.
Put a tax on it. That's how
and
we'll
that,
grow
and
it.
And sadly, that is – that looter mentality is the E-Day fix, the central idea of the Wolf administration. So again, to the listeners at home, these are the battles that we are waging day in and day out in your state capital, and that representative self-government is not a spectator sport. Please choose to live life with your brain turned on. And to learn more about, at least the three of us here on the program, where you can go and learn more about what's happening, Matt, where can people find you?
Yes, go to commonwealthfoundation.org as well as pleasenomoretaxes.org. Learn more about what Governor Wolf's plans are and how you can be an engaged participant in this and not a spectator, David.
Good to know. Neil, where can people find you?
Sure. They can find us at nfib.com/Pennsylvania. We're also on Twitter. At NFIB_PA.
And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and Sunday mornings on the Pennsylvania Cable Network at 8:30 a.m. with the PMA Perspective. So for Matt and Neil and myself, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Governor Tom Wolf has been in office for just over a year. But already, we know historians will put the words budget crisis in their lead paragraph. But a far more ominous phrase may get top billing, constitutional crisis. Like his authoritarian counterpart in Washington, D.C., Governor Wolf is willing, in fact may prefer, to shred the constitutional separation of powers and enact by executive fiat that which the legislative branch is unwilling to do. The Commonwealth has entered its ninth month without a completed state budget, and that has spawned a growing debate over the limits of gubernatorial power. Days before Christmas, the legislature again passed the state budget. This time, Governor Wolf signed off on most of the spending plan, but he blue-lined or line-item vetoed about a third of the items, thus extending the budget crisis. 3 months later, there is no resolution, but the administration is spending money anyway. This, many lawmakers argue, is a clear violation of the state constitution. The governor and his appointed state treasurer, Timothy Reese, argue there is a competing requirement for the state to keep certain agencies operating, especially those involved with ensuring public safety. But Treasurer Reese has gone far beyond that, even authorizing a loan from the state treasury to House Democrats to pay their staff during the ongoing budget crisis. The public safety argument is nothing more than a distraction from the main issue, which is, can a governor spend taxpayer dollars without explicit authorization from the General Assembly? It is a clear violation of the state constitution and one that will explode into a full-blown crisis, especially if the governor's illicit spending extends outside the realm of public safety. The budget, however, is not the only area in which Governor Wolf is willing to trample on legislative powers. He is trying to shutter the Public Employees Retirement Commission, known as PERC, an obscure state agency that earned his ire when it disagreed with his view of the pension crisis. The agency was created by an act of the General Assembly and signed into law by a previous governor. Lawmakers have sued in court to block executive dissolution of PERC, pointing out it would take legislative action to do so. This week, Governor Wolf again bypassed the General Assembly on the issue of the state's minimum wage. The governor has called for an increase in the minimum wage, But the legislature has refused to go along, so he signed an executive order unilaterally raising the minimum wage paid to state employees to $10.15 per hour. The action applies only to state workers, but will be extended to those companies doing business with the state. The minimum wage hike does not extend to private business. However, the impact on small business will be significant. Neil Lesher, legislative director for the National Federation of Independent Business, points out that the governor's executive order effectively prevents many small businesses from entering the bidding process for state contracts. Quote, some small businesses simply cannot afford to pay inexperienced entry-level workers that much more per hour, Lesher explained. This creates an unfair playing field that favors larger companies. Having fully bought into the Obama pen and phone style of governing, there is no indication Governor Wolf plans to return to a constitutional model anytime soon. His budget address to the legislature last month was hostile and confrontational and had the effect of solidifying Republican opposition, which at times had shown signs of wavering. It is clear crisis government is now the new normal in Harrisburg. With no resolution to the current budget impasse in sight and the deadline for adopting a budget for the next fiscal year less than 4 months away, the governor is content to act as if the legislative branch of government does not exist. But legislators will not sit idly by and be consigned to irrelevance. If the governor continues on his current course, the constitutional crisis will explode into the courts and possibly even lead to impeachment proceedings. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and PATownHall.com. You can also hear us on VoiceOfPA.net. For 21 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including our newest affiliate, WISL-AM in Shamokin, Pennsylvania. Welcome to our new listeners in the Shamokin area. And the 2016 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, now just a couple of weeks away, it is April 1st and 2nd at the Radisson Penn Harris Convention Center near Harrisburg. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, the premier gathering of conservatives each year here in the Keystone State. U.S. Senator Ted Cruz will address the conference. This year's featured dinner speaker, Judge Andrew Napolitano of Fox News, Stephen Moore of FreedomWorks and Fox News will be the luncheon speaker. Other speakers include Senator Jim DeMint, president of the Heritage Foundation, State Senator Scott Wagner, Daniel Garza of the Libre Institute, Congressman Mike Kelly, and many more. There will be interactive panel presentations and workshops. Get complete details and find out how to register for the 2016 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference at paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.